God, it's great when it rains. I hope it lasts all day. A few arthritic pains is a small price to pay. God, it's great when it rains.
That is the voice, as you well know, of Bonnie Kolak. She is the greatest singer I know. And her husband, Bob Wolf, is the greatest writer I know. His latest book is called Building the Architectural City, a handbook for rural renewal. Bob, I'm sorry we missed you a couple weeks ago, but I'm glad you're on the phone.
Thank you. Yeah, that was my fault.
No, don't be silly. There's no blame. There's no blame here. This book is, you know me. You've known me for a long time. I'm a total city kid. This book is fascinating on a million different levels. I mean, I think it is a real call to some sort of, among many things, social activism. You were specifically writing about an area called, a region called the Driftless.
The Driftless.
And I didn't, you know, I feel bad that I didn't even know what that was. I do now, but what is that, Bob?
It's a it's an area of that covers northeast Iowa, southeast Minnesota, southwest Wisconsin, a little bit of northwest Illinois, and it's characterized by hills and winding valleys. It's truly one of America's most beautiful places. It's about the size of Massachusetts,
and it's cut through. It's cut through by the Mississippi River, right?
Exactly.
And rolling hills and winding valleys. You know, I don't know specifically where you live. All I can hear about it from Chuck Osgood till I'm blue in the face or till he's blue in the face. But I do know. I've been to Galena and I get a sense of what it's like. What's so interesting about your book is you write 150-some years ago, this was a self-reliant and largely self-sufficient region. And you make it sound almost like a utopia of sorts. What happened to it?
Well, it's the same thing that happened to all regions of the country. Eventually, in about 1880, the Sears catalog, or the Monkey Ward catalog, came out. And people began ordering from the cities.
Yeah.
Houses could be shipped by rail.
Sure, right.
And so the local producers, the small craftsmen and so forth, began losing business to the catalogs and then to the larger businesses in the cities, the manufacturers and so on. And that was the beginning of the end. Slowly, or not so slowly, the U.S. economy centralized until it's in this state today, in which you pick any sector of the economy, and it's controlled by about five or six multinational corporations.
Yeah,
I think banking. There's just a few of them. So we're being strangled, not just rural Americans, but urban Americans too. We're no longer a productive economy, or at least certainly here in the Driftless region and in rural America. We're a service economy, and we sell our raw materials to be processed. And in exchange, we don't get much money. It's usually the corporations that are making out like bandits.
Part of what I get, too, from, and I'm, people can order this book anywhere, can't they, Bob?
It's on Amazon. The paperback is on Amazon right now. It's Building the Agricultural City.
By Robert Wolf. Find it. It's as thought-provoking a book as I can remember reading. And just in, you know, the whole notion of even mentioning, you know, Amazon is, you know, now even, you know, what happened to the Driftless region, it sometimes seems to me is what may eventually happen to the urban region, as you know, people are now will be able. I suppose you can now order everything that you could ever want online, couldn't you?
Right.
And not ever even have to go to a brick and mortar store. What you write in here, if you don't mind me quoting some from the book, many people hope to revitalize their towns by proposing bike trails or the Main Street program or something else, but are frequently opposed by a chorus of townsfolk who want to, quote, keep things the way they are, end quote. This, of course, is a recipe for further decline. How so?
Well, if they're not going to adopt anything that's new to them, that any remedial action that could actually improve things, then, of course, you will continue to lose your youth. They will continue to, you're not going to create jobs. So
right.
The youth
right.
leave for the cities. They go elsewhere. And there's just increasing dependence on dwindling federal and state dollars to keep your city services going.
And in some cases, too, I'm trying to remember the town I visited in it's the poorest county in Kansas. I was down there with Bill Curtis for a story, and there was a little town, Sedan, S-E-D-A-N, that was, you know, really down at its heels. And I remember that some of the townsfolk there were trying to lure people from a nearby Indian casino by building a yellow brick road in
wow.
the town. And I thought to myself, that's a horrible, horrible idea, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you must see that, don't you? I mean, there's another place in downstate Illinois that has a two-story outhouse that they try to lure people to come see. I mean, I'm all for not to use, but to come see. There just seems to be, before your book, an awful lot of desperate kind of ideas out there, Bob, to save things,
right.
aren't there? Give me some examples. I mean, you do in the book, and again, the title of the book is Building the Agricultural City, that some people look sort of too facilely for a quick fix.
Yeah, no, this is going to be slow. And by the way, this is the book is a marketing tool for a movement that is actually going on here. For years, I've written about the need for rural America to create decentralized economies that are self-reliant which would be productive enough to make people avoid the trauma of another national depression.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but this is something where I'm working with people in Iowa and Wisconsin, and we're looking at implementing the ideas that I talk about in the book. These are not ideas or these are not tools that I've come up with. These are tools like closed-loop agricultural systems, which you have in Chicago with the plant, and Milwaukee has it with the vertical farm. Something like that in rural America would provide food. We could, with a few of these out here, provide food for most of the Driftless region. And we're also working about towards municipal-owned utilities that are powered by renewables.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a community development bank for the entire region.
And like worker, and also, you know, there's something wonderfully, what I get out of this, there are a million things to get out of your book, Building the Agricultural City, but, you know, the whole worker-owned cooperatives is a, can you elaborate on that for a moment for we city folk? That's a great idea.
Yeah, I somehow stumbled on a region in Italy called the Emilia-Romagna, one of 20 administrative districts in Italy, and it's said to have the highest quality of life in Europe. They manufacture the Ferrari, the Lamborghini, and the Maserati, and some other of these great sports cars, but there are thousands of worker-owned cooperatives. The Italians have this, at least in this region, they have this heritage of real fine craftsmanship. And these cooperatives are relatively small. And by the way, there was a sort of a worker strong worker tradition there.
Mm-hmm.
These cooperatives might be at most 20 people. And so let's say we talk about ceramics. They sell high-end ceramics, very high-end ceramics to China, for example.
Uh-huh.
They have an office. Emilio Romagna has an office in China. So they're selling their ceramics to the top 3 and 4% of the population, which is a huge number.
Yeah.
And when one of these small cooperatives gets an order, it shares the production and other parts of the process with the other cooperatives. So if they all together, they fulfill the order. And all this business is done on a handshake, which would be inconceivable.
Oh, that is inconceivable. Do you
and
think
they have? Go ahead. Sorry.
When you are out talking, and I have to believe you're kind of like a very effective activist out here, but there's a tendency, is there not, that whole line that haunts me in the book is people like, we like things just the way they are without realizing how deteriorating things can be. Don't you think? Or people, how responsive do you find people?
Right now, a lot of people are responsive. Now, when I began writing about the need for regional decentralization going back in the mid-90s.
Right, sure.
In those days, people thought I was a bit nuts. I mean, literally. But now, with the divisiveness in this country and people just worried and afraid, and globalism, they fear globalism rightfully.
Yeah.
Now they're willing to embrace decentralization and to think about regionalism.
I just think it's a remarkably compelling book. Can you stay on through the news and we'll talk some more about this?
Love to.
Okay, good. The book again, the author is Robert Wolf and the book is Building the Agricultural City. I also want to ask you when we come back, if there are any, I find some of your ideas in here that could be absolutely applicable to the urban environment. So think about that, and if you want to tell me I'm insane when we come back from the news, be my guest.
Don't go to heaven without me and leave me here.
That is the voice of Bonnie Kolak, the longtime bride of my guest, Robert Wolf, the author most recently of Building the Agricultural City, which is a real, to my mind, not being a farm kid, a real call to action, a sort of very important kind of work of, am I wrong? It's a work of social activism, to my mind, Bob, and I think it's a healthy, hopeful, and healthy outlook on the future of this country of ours. People have responded well. Do you think some of the notions, philosophies, and ideas expressed in the book are also applicable to Chicago?
Sure. I mean, for example, the idea of a community development bank that originated in Chicago with Shore Bank. Remember that?
Yeah.
And that was very successful for many years. And building businesses, small business on the south side, and creating affordable housing. And it went under in 2008. If Treasury refused to bail it out. It was reconstituted as something else. I don't know if it's still operating as a community development bank, but the whole idea, it spawned imitations all over the country, replicas all over the country.
Wow.
It's a powerful model. And if you had something like that, the importance of that is that you can do things with a community development bank because its mandate is to serve the underserved.
Correct.
So they're willing to take a little larger risks than most commercial banks.
Well, I see, there are parallels to be drawn between the kind of you know, I'm not saying that some of the towns in the Driftless area are disenfranchised. I mean, they've just, you know, life and some opportunities have passed them by. But it's the same thing with various communities in Chicago too. I see it every day. There are real parallels there, and that's why I think this. You know, and I see it in you know, little plots of land where people are growing food for themselves out there. You know, what they need is that economic kind of development that you talk so articulately and passionately about in this book. Before I let you go, Bob, and give Bonnie my love, and I miss seeing you, you sound, you in this book, throughout Building the Agricultural City, you sound hopeful to me. Are you?
Well, I have to be. And yes, I think we're going to pull something together out here. And as one friend said, it could be a beacon of light to others who are trying to form bioregional cultures and economies. And by the way, a lot of the tools that I mentioned in the book exist elsewhere around the country and around the world. I mean, these things are in place. It just takes our imagination and our will and willingness to work hard to pull them together and to make life better for us.
Well, I think part of the, just in a couple more minutes, I got you. Part of the problem seems to be that many of the people in these areas now are a couple generations removed from you know, the ability to drive down a country road and see little towns as opposed to, huge Walmarts. Do you know what I mean? The kids of, you know, the generation of kids, I think, that split. So it's hard sort of to remember what used to be. Yeah. There's a weird image of how good it all used to be, right?
Yes. Yeah. But even the townsfolk who remain, many of the townsfolk who remain, still feel that they've lost that sense of self-reliance, so that that has to be rebuilt in various ways. But so they are dependent on these, as I say, on these dwindling resources, state and federal resources.
What's been the response to the book so far? I know it just has just been published.
Yeah, no, it's very positive because people have heard me talk about it in this area, and they've read sections of it. I've published sections online, and so yeah, there's a very good reception for it. And I think we're also creating a film. We're in the process of creating a film to give another way of expressing the ideas in the book.
Well, that's, you know, part of the whole thing these days is just spreading, is working very hard to spread the word. You know, to just the more and more people that can hear about this, because, you know, some of it struck me as revelatory. I don't think about farms, and I don't think about farm communities, but in reading your book, I started thinking about the similarities between what's going on in the Driftless region and what's going on here and elsewhere.
Yeah.
It was really amazing to me, Bob. You know how much I've always admired your writing and admired you as a person, and this is a book of, it's a real call to action and an articulate and passionate bit of social activism. Bob, take care of your sweet self. Go give your lovely singing wife a hug for me, and I hope to see you soon.
Okay.
All right, Bob, we'll talk. Thank you so much again. Robert Wolf is the author, and the title of the book is Building the Agricultural City. It has a lot, if you read it, when you read it, as I hope you will, you'll say, wow, some of this sounds just like what's going on in Chicago, and some of these solutions might really help this town. We'll take a break, and I'll tell you this, Chicago knows best, right? Hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. Of course, you're not doing that. On WGN-TV, your pick may be Chicago's Best. We're going to be talking about Groundhog Day in Woodstock when we come back.